Johnson. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. About 20 trucks carrying humanitarian aid have entered Gaza after the Rafah border crossing in Egypt was reopened. ABC's Matt Rivers in Cairo says this process was not straightforward.
It took until this morning here, local time, to just open that border for a small amount of time. There's so many different factors at play. The border is a fluid situation. And so exactly how this moves forward from here, I don't think anyone really knows. But what I can tell you is the message from everyone involved in the aid world here is that border needs to open back up and remain open so the amount of aid that is needed in Gaza can actually get to where it needs to go.
Two Americans who were kidnapped that day from a kibbutz have been released, a mother and daughter, Judith and Natalie Renan. They're dual U.S.-Israeli citizens from the Chicago area. Back in Washington, there is still no Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan came up short on his third bid to win the position. He is now out of the running. This is ABC News. U.S. Marshals are offering a $10,000 reward for the man suspected of killing a Maryland judge on Thursday. Police suspect that Pedro Argote shot Circuit Court Judge Andrew Wilkinson multiple times just hours after the judge gave Argote's estranged wife sole custody of their four children. Stroke is already the world's second leading cause of death, and there's a prediction that the burden is going to increase substantially by the middle of the century.
Stroke is affecting more and more people under 55, and if present trends continue, will lead to nearly 10 million deaths by 2050, a 50% increase. Many others will suffer permanent disability after surviving stroke. And while strokes are common across all nations, more people die from stroke in low- and middle-income countries. A report in the journal Lancet Neurology urging more investment in prevention, such as encouraging more physical activity, a healthy diet, and more accessible cardiovascular screening. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Brian Clark, ABC News.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal government just announced plans to build so-called hydrogen hubs, and Wisconsin is part of two of them. But environmentalists are concerned developers might increase carbon emissions. Suzanne Potter explains.
The feds just announced $7 billion in funding to produce hydrogen, which is used in hard-to-decarbonize sectors like aviation fuel, steel and glass production, power generation, refining, and heavy-duty transportation. However, as Patrick Drupp with the Sierra Club warns, the devil is in the details.
And if it's done correctly, maybe we can create some truly clean hydrogen to decarbonize. And if it's done wrong, we have a chance to actually further fuel the climate crisis.
Wisconsin will be involved with the Heartland Hydrogen Hub and the Midwestern Hydrogen Hub. Conservation groups are pressing for so-called green hydrogen, meaning hydrogen produced by electrolysis of water molecules, using renewable power built especially for the hub. They don't want plants to rely on existing renewable power, because once it is used, utilities could turn to other sources, such as coal and natural gas, to backfill demand. Some groups say so-called blue hydrogen is more acceptable because, although it uses methane, a potent greenhouse gas, it captures any carbon emissions and sequesters them. Drupp says the Sierra Club opposes blue hydrogen.
It still carries all of the same problems of using methane. It carries the same problems of fracking, potential methane leaks as you distribute the gas around the country.
Next, the Treasury Department needs to issue its guidance on the hydrogen tax credit that was created in the Inflation Reduction Act. That guidance will greatly influence how green hydrogen is produced and how the accounting for total emissions from hydrogen production is done. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Helen Brand. Today, I'm talking about something that deserves a lot more attention than it gets. Today, I will discuss the disparities in outcomes of the Black and African American caregivers. And according to a study found in the National Institute of Health, relative to white caregivers, Blacks more often work 40 hours or more per week caring for their loved one, 54% versus 39% of white caregivers, and often care for an older adult with dementia who is living below the federal poverty line, 32% within the African American community versus 12% in the white community. Or they are also caring for somebody that is Medicaid eligible at 42% versus 12%. African American caregivers are more often in high intensity care situations than others and are typically the only unpaid caregiver helping their recipient and providing care in mostly isolation. You know, given that Black family caregivers, who are primarily women, are really the backbone of not only family caregiving, but also in the paid caregiver role. For this reason, I want to ask two of the most badass community leaders I know to join me today to talk about caregiving in the Black and African American communities and what needs to be done to improve outcomes. Joining me today are Brandy Grayson, founder of Urban Triage, and Dr. Nakia Wiley, who has shaken things up in the world of education, inclusion, disability, and mental health awareness. She works in education and is on the board of Disability Pride Madison. Before we get started, ladies, can you tell me a little bit more about you, the community service work that you do, and what you're most proud of? And I'm going to start with Brandy.
Okay. Well, thank you for inviting me on. I'm super excited and super humbled to be here. I guess a little bit about the work that, you know, I do as an individual is I provide treatment foster care for children with high emotional behavior challenges. I also provide transformative education for parents and folks who work in institutions with youth and provide programming for youth rooted in trauma recovery, trauma-informed care, and really helping people develop a different script and story of how they see themselves, their culture, their history, and their future. And we also provide wraparound services, direct services, and we provide agriculture education. So we have a farm, and then we teach people how to farm. So our caregiving support is really based in looking at our scripts, rooting the things in maladaptive behaviors that keep us from being successful in our own right. You know, so that's what we do.
Wonderful. I love to watch Urban Triage and Facebook and just the things that you're doing and how involved you are in the community. I thank you for your work. And on that note, what are you most proud of?
Oh, yeah. What am I most proud of? I am most proud of the aha moments, the seeds that flourish later. You know, because sometimes as caregivers and folks that respond to crises and other issues in our communities, we don't get to see the seed blossoming. And when folks come to me years later, a month later, 6 months later and say, remember that time when this thing happened and we did this, or you supported us in that way, or you provided this access or access point or opportunity or resource. And because of that, I am this. Or my life changed, that is what I'm most proud of, is the individual healing and progress of our families and our parents.
That has to be very rewarding.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. And what about you, Nakia? Tell me a little bit more about the community service that you do, and what you are most proud of.
Well, first of all, thank you, Miss Liza, for allowing me to be back on community service. Let me start with, I am the president of Disability Pride Madison. Very proud about that. Woo-woo! Yes, we need volunteers and, you know, and donors. A shameless plug. I'm okay with that.
That's all right.
I also serve as, I was just elected as the vice chair for the Disability Justice Commission right here in Madison. So super excited about that. Partnering, you know, with our politicians. I like to rub elbows with them and throw my hat in the ring to let them know that I am most proud of fighting for the disabled community. I am most proud of that. And I am most proud of fighting the good fight to end anti-racist practices. And not only anti-racist practices, but anti-oppressive practices in the community that I live and serve in various capacities.
Nakia, you just don't stop. You need your own little Energizer Bunny commercial. Thank you for the work and the service that you do. And, you know, I like to ask all of the guests if they've had personal experience with caregiving. So I'll just toss this one back in Brandy's lap.
Okay. Have I had experience with personal caregiving in the sense of?
Yeah. Well, I would definitely say all the work that you do in foster care. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I like to define a caregiver as someone that is really taking care of either a senior or somebody with a disability. Yeah. A lot of organizations include grandparents that are taking care of grandkids. Yeah. It's just the matter of having that support. To me, people, you know, they talk about parents. Well, yeah. I'm a parent. Yeah. Parents are a form of caregiving. But to me, that's different in the sense you see your child grow and progress and become more independent.
Right.
In the caregiving role, it's typically the opposite, yeah. You know, and they're going to need you forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think the best example of that is the work that I do in treatment foster care. You know, I take care of children with disabilities, and some of it's IQ, intellectual disabilities. Mm-hmm. So some of our kids aren't able to transition on their own at the age of 18. A lot of the kids I take care of transition at 21 or 22, and that's only because the system won't allow them to stay any longer.
Right.
Right. Even though that they are not ready to be independent. Working with children in the foster care system can often be heartbreaking because you have limited rights and you have limited abilities, right? It's like what the social worker says, what everyone else says. Even as foster parents, we often think that we should have the greater say, especially when we take care of children day in and day out. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times we do not. And I think that's my best example of providing caregiving services or supports to folks who will need it forever, you know?
You're right.
And I think another example is the work that we do at Urban Triage with our wraparound supports. We deal with a lot of folks in our homeless community who are chronic homeless, you know, because of disabilities, because whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, or they have psych breaks because they're veterans, or, you know, they were awarded to the state and have been orphaned all their life and don't have families or supports. And along with that is ALDA issues and other challenges that are associated with being alone in the world.
Right.
And I think sometimes we think as community members and servers of the people that if we provide people with A, B, and C, then that should equal four, right? Like they should equal success. They'll be fine. Right. But that's not how it works for a lot of folks. And I really am looking to bring like more understanding and compassion to that aspect of our community that may never be able to stand on their two feet. And that's where the advocacy comes from.
Yeah. So you're caring for everyone. You got the whole town under you, just making sure.
Well, don't say that because people be confused at that.
You make sure everyone's taken care of. And Nakia, I know that you have had your hands full in that caregiving role as well. Can you tell me a little bit about your personal caregiving experience?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. In my family, my husband and my son and my granddaughter, they all identify as Black humans who have disabilities. And they don't mind me saying that openly, okay? I got their approval for that. I have been in a caregiving capacity since 1999 when I launched into early childhood education. And then in 2008, when my mother was dying from cancer, my sister and I supported her in that. But fast forward into what I'm doing now, I support the disabled students who identify as being disabled at Edgewood College. Liza, I think you know that.
I think I know a student or two that goes to Edgewood College that is a huge fan of Miss Nakia Wiley. So, yes.
And, you know, and Liza, I'm actually here with some alumni right here. Because you can
wonderful.
See me. Here. I'm here. Oh, baby, you know I don't play. So, you know, I have alumni here with me right now experiencing this because they got nooks.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I eat, sleep, drink, caregiving because it matters most. It hits home. Disability, mental health, invisible and visible disabilities, and the social injustices. And I don't play when it comes to my child and nobody. So for me, I started out as an educator in 1999 in Illinois, in Chicago. And I learned how to nurture and develop all humans, regardless of their abilities or disabilities. So for me, it run deep. This is deep. This is what I do. And you know, I got my peeps with me too.
Yeah, that's what you do. And you do it well. I'm often curious if the caregiver, if that's something, what makes a caregiver? You know what I mean? Is it just something in your DNA? Or is it just something that you know that you're, a lot of people are kind of, I hate to say forced, but forced into the caregiving role, but it's not for everyone. But you two just take everyone in, make sure everyone's taken care of and feel welcome. So again, I can't stop wanting to say thank you for the work that you do. When we come back from this break, we are going to talk a little bit more about some of the disparities of health outcomes in the Black community. And you two are problem solvers. That's why I had you on the show. You're people that work every day to get stuff done. So I want to learn from you, and I want you to tell us and the listeners what needs to be done to change outcomes in the Black and African American communities after this short break.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing? Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. prepare an emergency kit, and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Timeout!
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I'm your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today, I'm talking about the disparities in outcomes in the Black and African American community when it comes to caregiving. I'm joined by Dr. Nakia Wiley, educator, disability pride, I was going to say board member, but president, correct? President of Madison Disability Pride.
Yes.
And then Brandy Grayson, who is the founder of Urban Triage. Both dynamic women making much needed changes in Dane County and beyond. According to the Caregiving Initiative, the COVID-19 pandemic showed that the virus disproportionately affected communities of color, particularly for African American and Black communities. The caregiver role may lead to worse health outcomes due to the lack of formal support and increased barriers to accessing culturally competent services, according to research done by the Diverse Elders Coalition. I want to ask each of you, what do you think they mean by due to the lack of formal supports and increased barriers to accessing culturally competent services? Nakia, I'll start with you on this one.
Oh, yes. I mean, how much time do I have?
Right.
I don't have time to take you back to the history of the healthcare system up until present day. That's a lot of mistrust in the Black community. Mm-hmm. Let me be very clear when I say that. And it's the mistrust based on sex, okay, of how Black and brown people and people of color and poor white people, I'm going to throw them in there too because I love them, you know what I'm saying, have been mistreated. Mm-hmm. Because of their skin tone, because of color, because of race. And when we think about economics, the money, who has the wealth? Not the Black community. We don't have the wealth. And how many Black doctors and pharmacists and physicians are there if we started to pull that data? So we're dealing with a lot of barriers. We're talking about socioeconomics. We're talking about race. We're talking about housing.
Right.
If a Black disabled person is poor and they don't have housing, how can I even worry about getting medical care?
Right.
It's so many barriers, Liza. Oh, that's like a series.
It is like a series. This could be a series. This could be an every week thing. But I want to have a chance to ask Brandy, what do you think when the article said, due to the lack of formal support and increased barriers to accessing culturally competent services? What does that mean to you? It's a big one.
It is a formal support. I guess for me, that implies that there's not enough services that allow space or opportunities for families to get relief. So when we think about being a caregiver, when we think about the compounded impact of being Black in a society that's rooted in racism, that means that we already lack access to resources, opportunities, wealth, generational wealth, housing, a home. So if I'm already struggling on my own and I have to take care of my aging father, mother, or a disabled child, then the intersection becomes a little more complicated for me, right? So I have less access to respite care. I have less access to the doctors and the specialists to help me help my baby get better. And when we go inside systems and healthcare and institutions and say, I know this is wrong and I know this is happening with my kid or my mom or my dad, we're not heard, we're not listened to, because the words that come out of our mouth is just, it's almost like folks hear blah, 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 blah. And we fail to give, just hold space for the fact that whether you're consciously racist, right? Like you're consciously intentionally racist, or you're unconsciously racist, or you're unconsciously anti-Black because you're not white. You might be brown. You might be Black working inside institutions, and people come to you who are Black and have darker skin or what have you, and they need assistance. Our response to them is often rooted in disbelief, disregard, and devaluing of them, because we don't see people known as Black humanity. And we also assume that the folks who are, you know, part of the challenge are all white, but they're not. They're Black folks too, working in systems. We often think because we have Black or brown, Latino or Asian folks representing inside systems, whether it's education, healthcare, or otherwise, that they by default have the experience to advocate and respond and hear people. And that's just not true, because racism isn't based on race. Racism is based on position, power, and privilege. And oftentimes people known as Black that work inside system have to conform to the status quo, which make us the problem as well. So when you say cultural competence is lacking, I think cultural competence is a safe way to imply that folks don't have enough experience with Black people, brown people, or Asian people. But when in reality is a little bit more insidious than that. It's the disregard for people known as Black for being human. Right. Like we commodify and objectify people known as Black. So even when we're engaging them, enrolling them, or having a conversations, we already start from a place of dysfunction, defeat, or disregard for them and what their needs are. So I think that's what is meant by that.
I would have to agree. Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything that you say. I'm curious, though, when it comes to eliminating barriers. Dr. Nakia Wiley, what is one thing that we need to do to eliminate some of these barriers?
Well, hone in specifically on each one. We've already identified the barriers. So we're going to hone in on each barrier and we're going to organize. We have to have people in position in every entity, in the medical field, in the educational field, in law. We have to get organized and come together and do the action, because people have been talking for years. We're new players in the civil rights game. This is old, okay? And I'm from the don't talk about it, be about it. I didn't grow up here. I love Madison, but I'm a Chicagoan, y'all, and I'm accustomed to action. So hit the barriers. Hit them hard. Bring people to the table.
I love your answer.
Some action. Stop talking about it. It's so many platforms, but let's do it. What do we have in front of us today? Each day, it's the mirror work. I hear the music, but it's the mirror work. It's the mirror.
You're gonna take us right into break, and I can't wait to hear more after this short break.
All right.
From I-43 to I-41. This is the Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. About 20 trucks carrying humanitarian aid have entered Gaza after the Rafah border crossing in Egypt was reopened. ABC's Matt Rivers in Cairo says this process was not straightforward.
It took until this morning here, local time, to just open that border for a small amount of time. There's so many different factors at play. The border is a fluid situation. And so exactly how this moves forward from here, I don't think anyone really knows. But what I can tell you is the message from everyone involved in the aid world here is that border needs to open back up and remain open so the amount of aid that is needed in Gaza can actually get to where it needs to go.
Two Americans who were kidnapped that day from a kibbutz have been released. A mother and daughter, Judith and Natalie Renan, they're dual U.S.-Israeli citizens from the Chicago area. Back in Washington, there is still no Speaker of the House. Jim Jordan came up short on his third bid to win the position. He is now out of the running. This is ABC News.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
You are listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. Today I have been talking with Dr. Nakia Wiley and Brandy Grayson, founder of Urban Triage, and we are talking about the disparity in outcomes of caregivers in the Black and African American community. And I just want to say that according to Caregiving in the USA 2020 report by the National Alliance for Caregiving, African Americans often have more burdensome, easy for me to say, caregiving situations than their non-Hispanic, white, or Asian caregiver counterparts. They also tend to be younger and are often unmarried and have poorer health and frequently have to balance caregiving with full-time jobs. As someone who believes in equity and inclusion and is angered, embarrassed, and heartbroken, quite frankly, by the racism that goes on in the world today, I really want to understand this better so that we can all work towards making positive change. And because I am white, I thought it would be pretty darn foolish of me to sit here and speak into the microphone on what it is Black communities need to increase positive outcomes in regards to caregiving. So I invited two dynamic community leaders here, Dr. Nakia Wiley and Brandy Grayson, to join me and talk about this topic. Brandy, the article that I was reading earlier from the Caregiving Initiative stated, "We must acknowledge and listen to African American and Black caregivers before we can address their needs." Brandy, you probably don't even know this, but you really educated me on this statement. And I just got to tell you a story, and it has a happy ending.
Okay, good.
It's going to be sticky for a minute, but it has a happy ending. I was listening to you in the past when you were on air, and you were talking about just this, that it's the Black communities that need to work on these issues. And I don't know exactly what you said, but I'll tell you what my ears heard. Yeah. The Black people need to really work on these issues, and the white do-gooders have their role, but they need to stay out, or, you know. Yeah. And I remember being offended,
yeah,
probably because, one, I'm a white do-gooder, right? So you just told me to stay out.
Darn it, Brandy.
Right? And I'm angered. I'm angered about this racism. And so I just remember thinking, whatever. I had a little attitude for a minute.
Yeah.
But then I had to stop and reflect. And, you know, if you look today, what's going on in women's health care and the right for women to make their own decisions,
yeah,
you know who's making that for women? Old white men.
Yeah.
And you know what they need to do? Get the flip out.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I had my aha moment with you. Like,
yeah,
you're right. You're right. I can be there to support you in the ways that you need me to.
Yeah.
But I can't come in and
save the day.
Save the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that statement that I read earlier, we must acknowledge and listen to African American and Black caregivers before we can address their needs. What does that mean to you?
Well, that means to me, listening to the folks who are having the experiences, that means that we actually hold space for their humanity. I think that's the conversation we get away from a lot. And one of the things we neglect to identify is that in the context of white supremacy, patriarchal capitalism, the humanity of folks that are not like us is considered non-existent. It's almost as if you're from a different culture, a different country, a different walk, a different understanding of the world, or different religious beliefs, as if you don't deserve to say what you need, you don't know what you need. You know, like this idea that those people don't know what they need. Those people don't have enough sense. Those people wouldn't know right from wrong if it hit them in their face. And one of the jobs that the things that we need to work on an individual level, institution level, and systemic level is centering the humanity of those we serve. We're not coming to help anyone. We're coming to hold space, and holding space reflecting back to people their own internal and personal power to make change in their lives, right? And even if you are differently abled, you get a say in how you want to live. You get to self-actualize how you see fit. But within the context of social constructs, everyone thinks there's only right or wrong, Black or white. And life is so much more complicated and gray, you know. So I would say that is what that's saying. Like, not, you know, just not listen, but hold space and support and give resources, right? Because one of the things that Urban Triage as a nonprofit and organization, our biggest challenge is donations, because we don't look the part, right? Because we're really busy doing the work. We're in the streets. I'm in the street as CEO, as founder. I'm educating, I'm training, I'm teaching, I'm managing. We're doing a whole lot that's not as the same roles as other organizations or titles in other organizations. So we need to trust the people that the community trusts. If community is showing up and say, actually, we trust those people and they make a difference and they're transformative and they deliver their word, then the folks, the do-gooders that we call do-gooders, need to get behind those folks and support them with not just finances, but opportunities and capital building and resources and supplies and food and volunteer hours. That's what we need. from our folks.
I'm behind you. Just tell me what I need to do, yeah. Brandy. I'm there. Nikaya, what about you? There was one part in that article that really talked about, you know, just the generations of mistrust. How do we rebuild that?
Mirror work. Look in the mirror.
Yeah, that's real.
At yourself.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day. Examine yourself first. With each interaction that you have with a human who is different from you, check your biases. Check them. Check them. It starts with you, with that person in the mirror, before we start examining another human, because people are very complicated. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense. I'm just wondering what else is there, Nikaya? What else am I forgetting on this subject? I know there's a series that we could do on it. I know we could talk about it today. If you had a magic wand, what would you like to see done?
It is very simple. This is something that people told me and somebody told them, right? Treat people how you want to be treated. Does that make sense?
That's
all. Like really. Just to pause about, if it was me, how would I want to be treated? How would I want to be handled? And then if that don't touch into your empathy, now if it was my significant other, if it was my child, if it was my relative, do that part. In that same energy that you are putting out for your own self, if you love yourself, if you're going to take care of yourself, right? And you're going to love and take care of your significant others, your partners, your husbands, your wives, whoever, and your children and your grandchildren. That same energy. Do you hear me?
Exactly. I hear you. I hear you. I believe you. That's what you got to do.
Can I say this, Liza? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I consider you to be an ally and a co-conspirator. And I want to say thank you right now. But I'm going to say this part because it must be said. The civil rights movement taught us something. We do not need one leader. We don't need that. We need collective responsibility. So when people start getting their ego and their titles and their money and they think they cute, when they start putting all that stuff to the side, then we could get down and do some work. And you already know how I roll, Liza. I want to do the work. I don't want to talk about doing the work for 40 years, because I'm 45 years old and I'm grateful. And I don't know when I'm going to take my last breath, but I want my legacy to be do the work. And the work starts in the mirror first.
Amen.
And it starts with the interaction that you have with a human.
You know it. It's interesting because it doesn't have to be this long, super complex thing, right? It's do the work, treat people like you want to be treated. What else, Brandy?
Yeah, I would just say most people don't know what the work is. You know, like it sounds simple to us, but just like you said, like when I first said something that offended you, it struck a nerve, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how it is a lot of time when you're being expanded. You first contract inward, right? Everything feels really yucky. When people hold you accountable or you're learning how to be accountable and you're learning how to be in integrity with yourself and your word and your being, it doesn't feel good. And I think that's a part of the skill development that we don't give people. We don't develop those skills. We don't develop like what it means to be in integrity, right? With yourself and others, how to hold space for someone. Because if you haven't practiced holding space for your own demons, your own disabilities, your own darkness, your own triggers, your own BS, then you definitely can't hold space for other people. And I'm assuming that's what is meant by looking yourself in the mirror and doing the work. And the work really starts on an individual basis. How are you showing up for your children? How are you showing up in conversation? conversation with your partner. How, because if you're not showing up in love with them and the folks that you birth and are partnered with in your world, you darn sure can't show up for me. You can't extend grace to me as a Black woman if you haven't learned how to extend grace to yourself, your children, and your partners.
Well, and I love that what you said about the stickiness and being uncomfortable, because you're right. We're not taught how to deal with that.
And everything should be fair.
It's usually, look the other way. And
everybody get an award. No, right. Everybody does not get an award.
No. I love feeling uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That's why I'm doing this radio show as the world's biggest introvert, because you grow. Mm-hmm. When you're not comfortable, you grow.
Yeah.
When you're feeling those feelings, for me, instead of feeling them, I ask myself, why?
Why? What's happening?
What's the lesson here? What's causing this? So I couldn't agree with you more. There was one other article that, you know, we kind of touched on this, but I just wanted to throw it out there. It was an article that stated that studies have found that Black and Hispanic caregivers often feel ignored in medical settings and left out of crucial care discussions by staff. And that is one thing that both of you guys went to just right out of the gate. The Caregiving Initiative article that I referenced earlier also stated that service providers must work to reestablish trust among African American and Black caregivers to offset years of systemic injustice and historical discrimination that has deterred many from using formal services. That's one thing that I would like to ask you about, using formal services. Sometimes in the Black community, it's hard to make that connection. And I just want to know your thoughts about it, especially when it comes to caregiving. There's a lot of emphasis on how can we reach the Black, Brown, African-American community. So what's the disconnect and how can we reach you with the resources that are already out there?
I would just say interpersonal relationships is super important to our culture. A lot of times we think Black people don't have culture. We'll say, or people known as Black do not have culture. We'll say Black people don't have culture because they lost their culture when they were enslaved. But we do. We have lots of culture. And one of the things that culturally isn't super important to us is interpersonal relationships. If I know you, I can trust you to lead me, to advocate for me. I need to know you. You need to know me. And that's a piece that's missing in most institutions. It's not a personal relationship.
I like that. And you know, despite the negative outcomes in some regards to caregiving, there is actually some positive when it comes to the Black, Brown, and African American caregivers is their mental health. I've read that despite them having greater challenges, lack of resources, that their mental health is actually stronger than those that are white.
I wonder if it's not accounted for or measured in the same way.
I'm not sure. Nakia, we have just a few seconds, like 20 seconds. Do you want to speak on that? How do you guys stay positive? How are you guys?
Baby, joy, Black joy. Don't come after my affinity spaces. Do you hear?
All right.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Mino and the Mayor.
The Magic Man, Don Majkowski.
I met you one time. You won't remember this because you met a million people, but I met you at an airport.
Oh, yeah. You remember that match?
I remember.
Yeah, you were the guy in the airport. Oh, that's right.
Now, I'm sure you never
met
anyone.
How you been?
I just was telling Johnny yesterday when I heard you were coming on, you were so nice to me. And I just introduced myself. Hey, Schmidt from Green Bay. And you're one of the good guys.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WI. The Todd Alba Show.
What makes our society great is that we can believe in something bigger than ourselves.
Doesn't matter whether it's a soccer team or whether it's a political movement or whether it's a public school, whether it's a neighborhood PTA, a bake sale. It's about interacting with our friends and neighbors and making our communities better for having come together around a common cause.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local civic media radio station and on the Mino and the Mayor.
Brian, do you ever have ladies come to your shop, your beautiful, wonderful store on Military, and ask if the diamond they got was real?
Absolutely, they do.
They do, huh?
And how many, if any, are married to people like John Mino?
What's that supposed to mean?
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. And on the Civic Media app.
Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. And today I had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Nakia Wiley, who is just full of passion, and I don't even know how to summarize that ball of fire in regards to the work that she's doing, not only within the Black and African American communities, but also mental health, disability, education, out there making a difference. Same with Brandi Grayson and the amazing work that she does with Urban Triage. So I want to thank both of those women for coming out and sharing their stories. I hope that we were able to learn. And for me, one of the big takeaways is it doesn't have to be that hard. You know, like Nakia said, start by looking in the mirror, treating people how you want to be treated. It's a wonderful, essential first step. So thank you both for being with me here today and sharing your stories and your perspective. I also want to share that November is National Family Caregiver Month. It is a time which enables us all to raise awareness on family caregiver issues, celebrate the efforts of family caregivers, educate family caregivers about self-identification, which is huge for me. A lot of caregivers don't see themselves as caregivers. They see themselves as moms, dads, sisters, brothers, daughters, sons, which they absolutely are. But they also are taking on a caregiving role. And why it's so important for me, for them to realize that they're taking on this role, because it can have an impact on all walks of life, all areas of life, your finances, your mental health, your physical health. So those that are doing the work as a caregiver should really know that they're a caregiver and what that means, so that they can better take care of themselves, get connected to the right resources, and have that community for support. So the National Family Caregiver Month is actually something that's put out on a federal level. Each year they have a theme. This year's theme is Caregivers Connect, which I absolutely love. And what they mean by that is when you are sitting in a waiting room and you compare notes with the caregivers next to you, you're connecting. When you're turning on the Empowered Caregiving caregiver and learning from the guests that I have on, you're connecting. You know, when you engage with others, you're connecting. And it's just so important in the caregiving world, because it is hard. It is hard to be a caregiver, and to do it alone and in isolation is just setting yourself up for a rocky road ahead. You know, so speaking of Caregivers Connect, I want to share that next week I will be hosting from Washington, D.C. I'm going there on behalf of the National Alliance for Caregiving. I will be meeting with Ron Johnson, Tammy Baldwin, Mark Pocan, and the beloved Derek Van Orden. So can't wait to talk to those guys. If you guys have anything that you would like for me to say to them, go ahead and let me know. I'll give it my best shot. I think we're running out of time here, but you can give me a call at 844-967-2789 or send me an email at liza@civicmedia.us. And in regards to speaking of sending me an email and National Caregivers Month, I would absolutely love to hear some of the stories of caregivers that are really knocking it out of the park, that really go above and beyond. So if you have a caregiver in your life, if you want to nominate yourself, no shame in that. Tell me your story. If you want to come on an air and tell it, that works too. Otherwise, you can email me at liza@civicmedia.us. And if I have the opportunity to tell your story on air, I will send the caregiver a little gift box, caregiver gift box. I think I handed one out to Dr. Nakia Wiley this summer for all of the caregiving that she does for her husband and her granddaughter and her son. She is by their side every step of the way. So if you have a caregiver that you want to celebrate in the month of November, let me know their story. I want to be able to share some of the success stories as well. Caregiving, like I said, can be hard and difficult, but it is also joyous. You know, it's one special relationship that you have with another human being. You're making a difference in someone's life, and we need to celebrate that as well as talk about the things that we can do to make it easier and better for caregivers. So reach out to me with your caregiving story. And then from Washington, D.C., I will be speaking with Harriet Redman, who put together a wonderful toolkit for employers to help create caregiver-friendly employment opportunities for people going to work. You know, in the Great Exodus, we learned a lot of people that left during COVID were caregivers. They couldn't work. There was nobody there to pick up and take care of their loved ones. So it's something that all businesses are going to have to think of going forward, is how do we incorporate the needs of caregivers in the workplace? How do we make caregiver-friendly workplaces so that we're not losing this amazing talent? Because if you want to talk to a talented human being that can multitask like nobody's business, hire a caregiver. So I will be talking to Harriet Redman about that. And then I also am going to be having on Kimberly Feist from Feist Vocational Agency. She helps employ people with disabilities. And as we're coming to a close in the month of October, which is National Disability Employment Awareness Month, I want to have one last opportunity for somebody in the disability arena to come on and just share how easy it is to hire people with disabilities, the advantages of hiring people with disabilities, and what is really out there for supports as far as job coaching and internships and things on the governmental level that they have put together to encourage, support, and help hire people with disabilities. So I know that caregiving can be overwhelming and exhausting. That's why I want to end each and every show on this podcast. Positive note, you got this, and together we are stronger. So stay connected to the Empower Caregiver.
keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
I always like to go back to what Tom Cruise said. Just take a walk.
That's where you get your advice.
Well, don't you remember that long time ago, Brooke Shields talked about postpartum depression going on medication? He's like, you should just go for a walk around the block.
That's so like a man.
More great words from men.
There's a segment right there, Greg Buck.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Brock. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark.